I'm Lisa Davis, and I am so happy to have Dr. Adele Ryan McDowell on the program. Her book is fantastic. It is Making Peace with Suicide, a book of hope, understanding, and comfort. Adele, welcome to It's Your Health.
Oh, thank you so much, Lisa. I'm delighted to be here.
I am so happy to have you on the show. I love your book, and I was so moved by it. You know, both my brother and my husband worked on suicide hotlines for years, and I know it meant a lot to them. And I was really touched when you talked about the whole idea of making peace, that there could be some misunderstanding about that. Talk to us about that, the response you got, and then what you really mean when you say making peace.
Okay, great. Some people think when I say making peace, then I'm saying suicide is okay. Go ahead and take your life. First of all, I think suicide is an individual choice, and anyone who is in suicidal trouble, I'm going to do my very best to dissuade you from taking that action. But the idea of making peace is that we come to terms with it. Suicide is complicated grief because not only you have the grief factor, but you also have the trauma of suicide. And it's very hard for any of us to accept the reality because we keep thinking, well, what if only, because we love that person, we cared about that person, or they're just another human being that we have felt a connection with, and we don't want them to go, we want them to stay. So making peace with suicide is necessary for any of us to go forward. We have to be able to accept what has happened, forgive ourselves for any real or perceived injuries or hurts, forgive our loved one for any real or perceived injuries or hurt. And then through this process, we open up our hearts for some compassion, understanding, not necessarily agreeing, but understanding where they were standing at the time to make that decision.
You know, speaking of compassion, there's always so many heartbreaking stories about transgendered kids in the news committing suicide, gay and lesbian teens committing suicide. When you're looking at, you know, statistics and things, we just need more compassion and understanding. It's just, I find it so heartbreaking. And you have some reasons in the book. You talked about intolerance and bullying and substance abuse and addiction and mental illness. And dive a little bit further into these for us, Adele.
I will. They have found, with being a teenager, it's so hard.
Yes.
Certain hormones in today's world is so fast, and social media. Mm-hmm. And the very thing you want most as a teenager is to figure out who you are and to feel like you are part of some group. And they have found that children and teenagers who are perceived as different, whether sexual orientation, body size, peanut allergies, physical disabilities, become a target for bullying, right? And that bullying can become very cruel and extreme. And some children and young adults make the decision to take their lives, you know, that because they do feel isolated and lonely and cut off and very different. And it's very hard for them. And we also find it in our seniors, because they can become very isolated and alone, and they're often grappling with health issues and what have you, and their life becomes very small. I feel like there's a common thread in suicide goes across the board with substance abuse and suicide by economic crisis, organic brain injuries, but there is a common thread in terms of pain and disconnection to the nth degree, which I call disenfranchisement, mm-hmm. where you feel like you have no worth or purpose. And in answer to your thing about addiction, well, suicide and addiction unfortunately run hand in hand. A lot of research has indicated that addiction is a primary component leading to suicide, and that when you think about addiction, you're not thinking clearly. You might be impulsive to action. For young people, you know, they test limits a lot, and you get to a place where you may make an impulsive decision, or you get to alcohol, and many drugs are a depressant of the central nervous system, and then you think, what's the point? And then that leads you there as well, right, to that that final.
You know, one of the things in the book that was so heart-wrenching and just but so important to read are the stories of survivors and 2 weeks before Christmas. It says, I lost my 16-year-old son to suicide, and although it was in 1984, it seems as though it was yesterday. It was an unexpected and violent end and will haunt me the rest of my life that I didn't see the signs. Talk about that, about the signs, and about that blame that we need to let go of, because it's so unhealthy and it's not our fault.
The mom who wrote that was remarkable in her story and in her insight. And later in the story, as you know, she says it's amazing that she and her husband are still together,
yes,
having lived through it, that her daughter grew up to be just fine as a result of all of this. But it was very difficult. It's hard for parents with teenagers. You know, they can lead secret agent lives. We don't know what they're doing, right? They say, hey, I'm doing this, and then they're doing that. And they can have a secret life online, and you don't know. You know, so what do you look for with kids? You know, ideally, you want to be able to have open communication with your kids, because that's helpful. And you want it to be able that the kids can talk to you about the tough stuff without sometimes that parent reaction we try too hard of jumping all over them and say, no, you can't do that, and listening to what they have to say so they're free enough to talk to us. But if you notice the changes where your kid is depressed or super anxious or not going to school or not having any friends or isolating themselves in their rooms for long periods of time, not the usual teenage stuff, but for long periods of time, then, you know, you insert yourself and you talk, and not being afraid to get help for a kid. And I will tell you, many teenagers are not necessarily thrilled with the idea of getting help, because they feel like it's a stigma or what have you. But I have found in my practice and in speaking with other colleagues that often once they walk in the door and they get to talk to somebody and it's a substantive, caring conversation, that they can get some help and they feel like they have a resource, right? In a place where maybe they feel like they can't talk about it at home. But it's hard being a parent with today's kids and watching. And you know how they always talk about, Lisa, hey, you know, figure out who your kids are hanging with?
Yes.
That's an important piece, too, because we are influenced by our friends, especially at that age.
Oh, it is so true. You know, going back to in Chapter 9, how do we make peace? You have you, the survivor. You say, as a survivor of suicidal loss, you might feel several of these: afraid, angry, ashamed, crazy, depressed, devastated, dissociated and out of body, furious, guilty, and the list goes on. What are some steps people can take, aside from to definitely read your book, Making Peace with Suicide, if they just feel like it's just not getting better for them and the loss is just so devastating, which, of course, it is for everybody?
Oh, it is. It is. In the book, I give 7 steps, but let me just give you a broad stroke.
Sure.
I think the first thing is to accept that you are not responsible. That's the biggest nut to crack, because the individual made a choice at that time. They didn't do it to you, right? Mm-hmm. They did it because at that moment in time, and probably with the likely impact of extreme emotional pain and or haywire neurochemistry or tight thinking or trauma or the influence of substances, it felt like at that moment the only response to end the misery of their life. And acceptance is very hard, because if I were to put a pillow over your face right now, Lisa, you would fight me, right?
Oh, of course.
Because, right?
Oh, yeah.
That's our natural instinct. And so it's very hard to accept that somebody made that choice, but it's that much pain. You know the expression, suicide is a permanent solution to a short-term problem?
Yes.
That particularly, I feel, applies to our young people, because they don't know that there's another chapter. There are many more chapters. You know, it's you know, there's a lot of life and a lot of up and down and many things that happen. The kids don't know it. But for people suffering, it's understanding you're not responsible, right? It's important to know that. It's important to go very gently and understanding that as a survivor of suicide, you are experiencing complicated grief, most likely, and trauma. And whether it's the actual witnessing the aftermath or what happened beforehand or where your mind takes you, which can be worst of all. And to go gently, believe it or not, family members, loved ones who have survived a suicidal loss are at risk of suicide themselves.
Yes, yeah, I've heard that. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, well, it's because the taboo has been broken. Mm. They think, well, I'll just go be with my loved one. It's a way to get out of their pain, because they're in a, it's traumatic for them. And it's, and not saying everyone does that, of course not, but in some circumstances it happens enough that the literature will tell you it, when you are a survivor, you are now in that subgroup. So go very gently, go very carefully. Find someone to talk to or a group. I met a woman a couple of years ago. I was at the Compassionate Friends Conference doing a presentation, and I meet this woman. Now, everybody there wears a name tag with their name and the name of their child who died. I did not have a child who died, so my name tag looked a little different. They're like, who are you and why are you here? And I was presenting, and this woman told me she had lost her son to suicide and went to the Compassionate Friends in her town. And she goes, I was having such a hard time. And that week we had five new members, and every one of them, of the five new members in the Pacific Northwest, had all lost their children by suicide. Mm. She said it was a very tough meeting, but she connected with one of the moms, and she and the mom began talking. And in helping that mom, she helped herself because she didn't know how she would get through it. We all need each other, and whether it's a group or therapy or a relationship with a book or another individual, and people in the book, people give tips. One woman said, I just talked to my best friend nonstop. I had to talk about it nonstop. So not only do we have the acceptance and knowing you're not responsible and understanding the grief process, right, then there are the three things, right? There's acceptance, forgiveness, and compassion. And going and working through those three things, you can find a way to make peace. But I will also add that grief is an individual process. And, you know, people say, oh, you should be through in a year, or you should have done this by now.
I hate that.
Just nod politely, say thank you very much. But grief is another way that we remember to love, and grief is another way to love. And we don't want to stay stuck in our grief, but it's, as with everything, it's not all good, it's not all bad, it's complicated because we're human beings. Dealing with suicidal grief is a tough journey. It's a tough journey. It's not for the faint of heart. It's a lot of work to get to the other side, but people have done it. They share their stories in their book on what works for them, because there are a lot of ways. But it's, we have to remember it's an individual process and not to judge. That's probably the biggest thing, Lisa.
Sure.
You know, judging people creates suicide. Judging others makes everybody distance. You clam up if somebody's judging you.
Yeah, I completely agree. Adele, can you stay for a little bit longer? We need to take a quick break.
Yeah, of course.
Oh, great, wonderful. We'll be back with more from Dr. Adele Ryan McDowell in a moment. Hi, I'm Lisa Davis, and I'm having a wonderful conversation with Dr. Adele Ryan McDowell. We're talking about her book, Making Peace with Suicide, a book of hope, understanding, and comfort. Adele, I definitely want to have time to talk about our veterans. It is absolutely heartbreaking, the statistics, if you want to talk about that. And I feel like, you know, we keep hearing about it, but what is being done? I get so mad. I have like smoke coming out of my ears because it's such a crime of what's happened and how they're protecting us. And look what they come back with. It's just horrible.
It is horrible. And there is 22 veterans a day take their lives by suicide.
Oh my goodness.
All right. Now in the United States as a whole, there's a suicide every 13 minutes. There's
an
attempt at suicide far more frequently than that. And the World Health Organization will tell us that there is a suicide around the globe every 40 seconds. Now, we look at our veterans, all right? Trauma is a huge factor with suicide. And you have psychological trauma. You also have physical trauma to the brain. We're finding with combat soldiers, as we do with athletes and people who have fallen down a lot, had many car accidents, you know, the soft tissue damage to the brain, like your brain bounces around your cranium, right, is cumulative and has an impact. I think it was Dave Duerson, the football player. He took his life by shooting himself deliberately in the heart and not in the head, and leaving a note for his family that said, please, please, take my brain to Boston University. They had some kind of brain center. Please take it there and look at my brain. And they did, and they discovered that his traumatic brain injury, you know, and these things start with progressive post-concussive syndrome and CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy, that they found that there was great damage to the brain. The brain had aged, and it caused all the depressed feelings and everything else. And the brain damage is what led to that football player suicide, but also leads to many of our veteran suicide. The other thing is, when you experience trauma, and veterans and childhood sexual abuse survivors are at the top of the list, right?
Yes.
You come home, your world is different. Nobody understands what you've been through. The movie with Bradley Cooper, American Sniper, right?
Oh, I've been wanting to see that.
He does an excellent job of looking at this movie, looking at this issue. If he comes home, and at one part of the movie, he's home. His wife doesn't know he's home from war. And he's sitting in a local bar, and he goes, "Hi, I'm home." And she's like, "Why aren't you here?" He goes, "I just needed to take a breath." You know, what the mind does. When you've been through trauma, you go through flashbacks, you go through body changes, you cannot sleep, which emotionally stretches you to the nth degree. Anybody who has sleep problems know that they have a hard time sometimes hanging on.
Mm-hmm.
You have all this, you don't know how to talk about it. I talked to one female vet, and where she was living at the time, the VA office was so overloaded that she wasn't really getting any help. And she ended up being homeless. She had a son, and she was in a desperate place. She moved to another area. She got involved with a church. She later found another counselor, and that counselor got her through and helped her. You know, the VA has been overwhelmed by the amount of trauma that they have to deal with. I think they're looking at it, but I know that there are a lot of other individuals, like I love Edward Tick's work, and there are a lot of people out there doing great work for the veterans and helping people to work through this, because it is a national problem. These men and women come home. Battle itself is trauma. For women, it's even you add another layer of a high probability of sexual harassment or sexual abuse.
Mm.
Right? It's very complicated. You come home, it's a different world. I happened to meet a gentleman from Britain, and he had been in Afghanistan. This was a few years ago when they were setting up camps, and he ran the food services for the Americans and the Brits. And his sister said to me, "Please look at him." And I said, "He has PTSD. He wasn't on the front lines per se. He was at the base, but everything he witnessed with the soldiers and the requests they made of him, and like we've all watched the TV show and the movie MASH," he would say, mm-hmm. "they would make an announcement about an angel flight coming in, and that was somebody who was deceased." Mm-hmm. Constantly confronted with blood and guts and death and life and making decisions and feeling guilty if your decision resulted in something not so good. And very difficult way to be, a very difficult way to live. It's not running to the library to hand in your overdue book.
You are so right. Adele, I definitely want you to come back when we have more time. I'm just so moved by your work. Again, Making Peace with Suicide, a book of hope, understanding, and comfort. Adele, tell us all the ways we can learn more about you and your fabulous book.
Oh, thank you, Lisa. There's a website, makingpeacewithsuicide.com. And I have also another website, AdeleRyanMcDowell.com.
Terrific. Adele, you are a gem. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Lisa. You've made my day. You're great.
Thank you.